It's time for three stories you should know.
I'm trying to play basketball. Y'all come here every day, ask me about free agency, ask my teammates, my coaches. You rile up the fans about it. Y'all, let us play basketball. That's all I'm saying. And now when I don't want to talk to y'all, it's a problem with me.
That was Golden State Warriors superstar Kevin Durant speaking Wednesday night. Durant wasn't the only NBA star who expressed frustration ahead of Thursday's trade deadline. And that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by Julie DeCaro, sports writer and host at Chicago's 670 The Score via Skype, and by sports writer and editor Patrick Ruby. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's always fun to be here.
Trade week in the NBA has turned into Drake week. A lot of players are in their feelings. You heard Kevin Durant express his frustration after ending a 9-day media boycott. He's a little upset that there's been increased speculation about his future after the New York Knicks traded Kristaps Porzingis and opened up a ton of salary cap room that could be used to sign Kevin Durant as a free agent this summer. Meanwhile, LeBron James, after the Dallas Mavericks traded Harrison Barnes in the middle of a game, sounded off in an Instagram post and basically wondered why it's cool for franchises to do what's best for them. But then he said, but it's not okay when a player wants to be traded or leave a franchise that he's selfish, ungrateful. What I think has happened here is players are feeling a little bit squeezed in the, you could call it fantasy sportsization, you know, that they're only seen as assets now and they're not thought of as real people with feelings and with emotions and with real world needs.
I think you're right about that. I mean, I would go one step beyond and say it's not only sort of the fantasy sportsization of everything, which I, by the way, I completely agree with. You know, it teaches you to view players as production widgets, essentially. But also, across sports now, we've got so many owner-imposed cost controls, from salary caps to rookie-scale contracts to all of these things that essentially teach you as a fan to learn, and correctly, that your team is only successful if it successfully manages these assets. And honestly, I have to say, as a fan, I get it. As a Washington Wizards fan, I suffer it. But it also kind of stinks because I do like watching basketball. I do like caring about these athletes as human beings. So in some ways, I'm pretty sympathetic to what Kevin Durant had to say.
You know, one of the things that makes the NBA so much fun is the drama, right? I mean, you know which players are beefing. Everybody's on Instagram. Everybody's Snapchatting. But you can see how when it comes to this kind of thing, it really is very emotionally draining for the players, right? That aside, one of the things that I am constantly arguing with my callers about on my show is the fact that they will look at a basketball player or a baseball player and say, nobody's worth $18 million. And I will never understand why people side with billionaires over millionaires. I mean, honestly, given what's been happening in this country, not just in sports, but the depression of wages across the board, honestly, people should be siding with labor when it comes to these issues.
I want to go back to what you said about the fascination with drama. I think all of us in the media are very cognizant of the fact that it drives ratings. I had a conversation with Kevin Durant about this a couple of years ago when everyone was asking about his relationship with Russell Westbrook after he had left Westbrook and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And people want to know, were they going to talk to each other? Could they still be friends? He thought it was very juvenile. But I explained to him that's the type of thing that makes the NBA go. That's part of why the business is so big.
I think that's right to some extent. But at the same time, you know, I mean, we wouldn't talk to a regular person and say, hey, I heard you might be losing your job. What, you know, you want to talk about that? So I don't really know why we treat NBA players that way, other than there's this idea that if I were in your position, I would never complain about anything.
Julie, what are your thoughts about a team near and dear to you, the Chicago Cubs, which has been in the news this week for some unpleasant reasons?
Yeah, well, you're never having a good offseason when news of your owner's anti-Islamic racism and xenophobia knocks the accused wife batterer off the front pages. But that's what happened with the Cubs. Addison Russell had sort of been dominating a lot of the headlines this offseason. The Cubs gave him a contract when a lot of fans wanted to see him gone. But nobody's talking about that now because of this second round of splinter emails. The first round sort of showed the Ricketts family maybe not being portrayed in necessarily the greatest light, but they were certainly nothing like this round of emails, which show Joe Ricketts, who is the patriarch of the family, talking about a future in which there are no Islamic people and saying things like it's practically illegal in this country to be a white person. Ridiculous emails. They were difficult to get through. And this time, for sure, we saw more and more people saying that they're canceling their season tickets, that they need more from the Ricketts than just to come out and say, you know, dad's not really part of the team or he's not part of the day-to-day operations. The Cubs fans really feel like they want more and that they deserve more.
I think back to the NBA. I think back to Donald Sterling and what happened with the Clippers. And I wonder in this case, is it really on the fans from the bottom up? Is it the responsibility of the league from the top down to do something about this? What can they exactly do? I have a feeling, because I'm cynical, that this is the kind of thing that will just blow over. People will still love the Cubs. They still love baseball. They'll just move on and be like, well, this is just one crazy old guy. What are you going to do? But again, thinking back to Sterling, it's not a perfect analogy at all. And Jay, I'd love to hear what you think about that. I do think it's possible you could see MLB do something about this.
I think the primary difference in this case is that Tom Ricketts is not the main owner of the Cubs. Certainly he bought the team, but then he gave it to his children. But it does bring up the impossibility to distance the franchise from the actions of the ownership, though. And the Ricketts family has been very involved, let's say, with the current administration, an administration that instituted a ban on Muslims from certain countries.
Well, yeah, I think that largely both Major League Baseball and the Cubs fandom have bought kind of the fiction that Joe Ricketts has nothing to do with the team, that he doesn't own the team, which is incorrect. He's not on the board of directors, which the four children are. But, you know, the first round of emails that Splinter put out made it really obvious that Joe has his hands in everything.
One positive thing I think that's come out of that is that we've heard from so many Muslim Cubs fans through social media, through an op-ed piece in the Chicago Sun-Times. And I think it was really important to hear their voices, to get a sense for the pain that they felt in seeing people connected with this franchise that they love, that they are season ticket holders of, that they, you know, go through all the ups and downs of a season year in and year out for, that sense of rejection that they felt.
You know, they've already alienated women with the domestic violence incidents. They've alienated the LGBTQ community with Daniel Murphy and now the Muslim community. So it'll be interesting to see how much more this fan base has left in it.
Well, let's hope there's no old yearbook photos to resurface. Patrick, what do you have for us this week?
So I want to talk about the NFL. So this week, the Kansas City Star got its hand on the Chiefs' tax returns from 2008 to 2010. There really wasn't much connection between how the team does on the field and how much money it makes. And that's because about two-thirds of their revenue comes from a league-wide TV contract and other deals that all the teams split equally. Second, the truth is that the NFL is a really great business. How so? Well, in 2010, the grown children of team founder Lamar Hunt split nearly $40 million in profits. Third thing they found out, charging fans an arm and a leg for parking only accounted for 1.5% of team revenues. So when your favorite team is soaking you for a parking spot, rest assured they're not doing it to balance the books. They're just doing it because they can. Now, to me, the biggest takeaway here is what a wonderful little monopolistic socialist paradise NFL owners have built for themselves. The Chiefs president, a guy named Mark Donovan, told the paper that the NFL is, quote, a tough business. Well, thanks to these tax returns, we know much better than that.
We've been talking about this with regards to Major League Baseball, that you don't have to go out and spend all the money on Bryce Harper and have your team win. There's a marginal return on a team that wins the World Series versus just a regular run-of-the-mill team. It's going to be real interesting to see how fans respond to that, because it feels like it's a bubble that's not sustainable. At some point, people have to be watching your product.
I'll never forget, I guess it was 9 years ago now, in the 2010 NBA Finals, the Lakers and Celtics went to a Game 7. And right before the game started, somebody with the Lakers told me that actually, financially, they would be better off losing that game. Now, he didn't want to see them lose, but they were going to have to pay bonuses to the coach. Phil Jackson had a championship bonus. I think some other bonuses for the players might have kicked in. They wound up picking up the tab for the championship parade, which was like $1 million. So it was actually very costly for them to win.
I find it kind of ironic and laughable that these rugged, bootstrapping billionaire guys also are busy creating their own little socialist paradise.
Our guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know, they've been Julie DeCarlo, sports writer and host of Chicago's 670 The Score, and sports writer and editor Patrick Ruby. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jay.
You're listening to Only a Game from NPR.